Welcome to the Center for Advancement of Virtual Organizations podcast, How AI is Shaping the Future of Remote Work. I'm Brian Arnold, professor in National University Sanford College of Education and chair of the Global Innovation, Social Emotional Learning and Educational Technology Department. Today, I'm also joined by Benjamin S., author, perhaps co-author, of The Millennials AI Guide to Technology, The Handbook of the Future Today. Our discussion will focus on using AI to enhance remote work. Welcome, Benjamin, and thanks so much for taking the time to come and chat.
Thanks for having me.
So, may I call you Ben?
Ben works great. Yeah, thank you.
Excellent. It looks like we both spent at least 4 years in Minnesota and earned a master's degree from USC. So basically, we're twins from possibly different generations.
Oh, no way. I didn't know you went to USC. Yeah, I grew up in Minnesota and I have a master's from University of Southern California. Go Trojans and go Gophers.
Awesome. Yeah. I went the other way. I went and got my master's at USC and then spent 4 years in Minnesota. So there we go. And I assume since you wrote the book that way, you're a millennial?
I'm a millennial. Yeah, like right smack dab in the middle of them, 1990.
Nice. Okay. So that's when just after I graduated high school. So I'm Gen X. So I'm looking at it from a slightly different perspective. I'm looking forward to incorporating both perspectives into our discussion. So I wanted to add the caveat, and we talked about this a little bit before the podcast. I've worked remotely since 2007. So I'm very much looking forward to learning more about how AI and remote work together. To get us started, can you please tell us just a little bit about yourself and your experiences working remotely?
Pretty much ever since I graduated college, I've been working remotely in one form or another. So I started out as a freelance media production. I was a drone pilot. And there was some in-person where I'd have to go in and, you know, make some drone videos, but then all the editing and was all done remotely. And so that was kind of like a, you know, beginning of my career. And so now I'm fully remote. I work out of a WeWork and I have a global subscription. And so currently I'm in Europe at the moment. And so I'm traveling, you know, to kind of various cities throughout Europe. I was in Asia a little bit as well, all working remotely. And currently I work for a geospatial AI startup. And so it's the kind of the wave of the future. If you don't have to go into an office, it's nice to be able to kind of have freedom of location and be able to interact with different cultures, all while getting your work done. So I'm also able to kind of play the time zones to my benefit. So being able to get work done on time, as in like 7 a.m. to a client or to a boss. It's really nice. And it's really like 2 p.m. where I am. So there's a lot of different benefits to working remote.
Nice. And I've seen the time zones play to people's benefits and also cut the other way where everyone wants to know if you can come to a meeting that happens to be, 4 a.m. your time.
That's definitely happened before. Yeah. It's, usually not a big problem. Get a tall cappuccino and you're ready to go.
There you go. So online requires a little bit more coffee, maybe. It sounds like you have some very authentic, I'm going to keep using that word, examples of why you work remote, how you're leveraging that, how you're working with the AI. Like, this isn't just putting a hat on a hat or rubbing some internet on it. There's definitely good reasons for doing what you're doing, and you're applying it in really interesting ways. So in that vein, your book is an authentic example of how AI can shape the future of remote work. Can you tell a story about how that project came to life and how it's going now?
Yeah, so it started really during COVID, the spring of 2022. So COVID was kind of waning and OpenAI had kind of just released. I've been using OpenAI for almost 2 years, probably close to a little over 18 months. And so I was a beta customer with them. And so it kind of blew me away how, you type a few things in, it auto completes. This was even before ChatGPT came out. This was like a predecessor to it.
I was going to say, this is before November 2022 when it sort of went consumer to everybody. You were in there before.
Yeah, I was using it. September 2021 was when I started using it. Something around there. And so
the AI version of your hipster credits are established. You were there before it was cool.
Exactly. You got to get the OpenAI street cred. I was a beta customer with them. And so I kind of was testing out some of their various APIs, application programming interfaces. And so I was testing a few of them out. And so, you know, one day I was like, you know what, I have probably 100 pages written and that the AI and I had kind of collaborated on. And so that was kind of like the beginning. I'm like, you know what, I could probably just turn this into a book. And so then the first one came out. It took me probably a week to, or maybe 10 days to write the first draft. This is the first one, the technology book. And so that—
Writing it in conjunction with the AI virtual assistant, as it were.
Basically, yeah, exactly. And so, then I went through, edited the book together, made a cover, and then published it on Amazon. And then I was like, you know what, I should do another one. I wrote the remote workbook. That I think I did that in less than a week to write the first draft. I got stock images from free online and then kind of stitched it all together. And it's kind of like having an autonomous car drive you across the country. You're kind of, if you have ever driven a Tesla, you're kind of like pulling the steering wheel to let it know that you're there. And then it does, most of the work.
Great analogy.
Yeah. And so basically taking the idea of remote work, you've been cooped up for however long, 2 years. And so I'm like, you know what, there's a whole world to go explore. And I decided it was highly beneficial to go check things out, learn new cultures, maybe learn a new language. And so it's kind of like it felt like a note to myself saying, go check things out and then inspire others to go do it, because it's so possible. All you need is an internet connection and a computer.
Excellent. And I love the theme that's sort of emerging of, not only are you leveraging the affordances of this technology, but you're using it to free yourself up from what could be deemed drudgery and focus on the good bits of what you want to do, and use it to free up your time so that you can move around and use that remote access to keep your body portable and your mind where it wants to be. So that is amazing. Would you do it again? Would you write another one that way?
Yeah. So I've actually, I've written five this way, and I have two more books that are kind of ready to— it would take me a few days to edit them together. And I don't think I'd do another one in that short of time. I want to make sure I put basically go through for maybe 3 months and really kind of fine tune it, if you will. But I plan on releasing at least two per year. It may be more. I mean, with the current models, GPT-4, you could produce a full book in probably a day if you really worked at it. I think everyone should produce a book. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think that in the near future, if you're going to, say you have you rent out your apartment and you want to go on a vacation, say it's just like a road trip cross country, you'll make your own book. You'll have an AI read the book to you, and you'll go across country. So you basically just published a book. You have the AI read it to you, and then you end up in a new location. Your apartment's being paid for via Airbnb, and you're in a beach bungalow, doing your work.
That sounds great. And I was going to ask you, who do you think should take advantage of this? And it sounds like it's ready for everybody, which is amazing. you sort of already answered this question, but let me ask it a slightly different way. What do you see as some of the lowest hanging fruit for most of us to partner with AI, other than writing a book on vacation, to boost productivity? Let's say we're still doing our regular job. So boosting productivity, freeing ourselves up, freeing our time up, freeing ourselves from some of the tedious or the mundane, but still retaining a sense of meaningful work satisfaction.
Yeah, there are so many opportunities. You know, ChatGPT is kind of the tip of the iceberg, I think. And, you know, it's really exciting the way that this is kind of unfolding currently. So, you know, one way to think of this is you have a person with, say, 110 IQ, and you partner with the AI that has 140, 150 IQ. And so, you know, that makes that pulls you up to become smarter. You know, everyone has a smartphone, which has access to the internet, which has access to a supercomputer with that's running an AI algorithm, which is, you know, ChatGPT. And so that's really, really exciting. You can program that to do kind of whatever you can think of. So, you know, something that everyone's really excited about is the ability to have the digital assistant, you know, a super intelligent digital assistant that knows. So like a good example would be going through some of your, you'd have to obviously allow it to do this, but go through your emails and it could take on your own persona and say, hey, I know that you interact with client A like this. He or she just messaged you. Here's two or three versions of how you might answer this, and you just click send, basically, and then or auto scheduling. So like auto scheduling is something really exciting. I started playing around with an auto scheduler for probably around 2017, and so it would effectively look at your schedule, and then it would automatically follow up with the person you're speaking with like two or three times, and then it would sync. And so you like imagine how much time you spend following up with a customer or your boss or you know, whoever it is, even if it's your significant other, going to figure out when to go on a date. But you know, figuring out time in your schedule, having an AI do that, which is really just kind of mundane everyday type of tasks, it saves a ton of time. And then also things like Zoom meetings. So like if you have an AI auto summarize a 2-hour, you know, quarter meeting, or even just a 30-minute meeting, it can auto summarize and then tell you the main things that are, you know, relevant to you. It can even tell you like sentiment of each of the team members. Are they confident in what they're doing? Do they need help with certain tasks? And then that's kind of where you're partnering with a AI that has like 140, 150. IQ, which is, it's really exciting. There's a ton of different ways for enhancing productivity, facilitating communication, and really the goal is to improve decision making. So I think it's really the tip of the iceberg here. It's like we just discovered electricity or fire.
Love all of that. So as you were painting this picture of this fantastic today, the science fiction writer in me started creeping forward a little bit. So you're an early adopter, and you're seeing some massive gains and efficiencies and advantages in using this technology now. So let's imagine it's a few years in the future and the world has caught up and they're savvy to all of these things and expectations are higher. Do you think that leveraging these tools will always put you in an advantage, or eventually it will be the way to stay at equilibrium with what the increased employer expectations are probably going to be?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that, you know, where we currently are right now, it's you have to be using not only ChatGPT, but you have to be using multiple AI, you know, APIs, services. It's really becoming standard, and it's again, it's your assistant. You know, it's it's kind of like you're the one driving a car, and you have to make sure you're staying in the lanes, make sure that, you know, things are going correctly, and you're telling it where you want to go, and it'll help you get there, you know, maybe 90%. But you know, you're going to have to still do some of that, some of the things that still take human capabilities. And, you know, I think that if you're going to have a salesperson, they're going to do more sales if they have an AI assistant. If you have someone who's a screenwriter, they're going to be able to produce, you know, more ideas for a screenplay. It's going to be a force multiplier. You know, it's already started, and into the future, it's going to be continuing to be a force multiplier.
Love that term. So let's, assuming that not everyone listening is at the same level of enthusiasm or familiarity with the tools, although I imagine that's probably what drew them to this conversation. You can use the analogy of driving the car. So at what level does using these tools require, and I'm begging the metaphor here, you to be a mechanic? And at what level are you simply, you've passed your driver's test and you know how to use these tools? And then talk a little bit about your own experience. How technologically savvy are you, given that you've really leveraged these tools to your benefit?
Yeah, great question. Right now I think that even, you know, 90-year-old grandma and grandpas could use ChatGPT very easily. You know, all they really have, it's because it's gone from the user interface is, you know, it, you don't even have to type into it, you can just speak to it. You know, so it's the barrier to entry of using AI is so low. I mean, we use AI all day, every day, and you know, whether we know it or not, that sounds kind of scary, but you know, if it really, it depends on who's in charge of the AI. Are they using it for good purposes? And you know, are they trying to make you a better person? Are they trying to help you get to where you want to go? Because you know, if the AI is there to help you get to where you want to go, it's being used in a appropriate manner. You know, I think that the future looks really bright, and you know, so it's really it really depends on who's using it, how they're using it, and what they're trying to do. And you know, again, the possibilities are kind of endless. It's an open playing field.
So Ben, I love the your optimism and your perspective, the virtual assistant, a partner, a force multiplier. But there is a lot of chatter out there about the different types of applications this could conceivably be put to. It's a tool, it's neutral, people aren't always. What sort of ethical considerations, or if any, are on your mind in its use?
Yeah, you know, it's like the gun debate. It's you know, that's such a hard topic to talk about, but you know, it really kind of comes down to the person who's using it, the developer of the system, and then also too is, so it's a double-edged sword. It's dual use. So there's the ability to produce malicious software. I think that's already kind of been proven. But then there's also so that cat is already out of the bag. And then you also have the ability to produce cybersecurity tools that are you know, at a much faster rate. And so, you know, do you think that the people who are going to produce malicious software are going to stop? No, they'll probably end up getting, you know, an island where there's no regulation, and they'll be the ones that have the strongest AI. So like, you don't want to overregulate the people who are going to be following the rules, so that they're not able to combat the people who are not going to follow the rules. There has to be some sort of way to figure out if someone's using it for good or bad, but then that also turns into some privacy concerns. So it's a difficult topic, but I would think that overregulation is going to would lead to a potential bad outcome for the populace, because if you overregulate, then you'll leave it open to, say, North Korea getting a super strong AI, and we're left holding a super watered down AI. So you know, there's a lot of different ways to look at this.
I appreciate your perspective on this, and that a lot of us are viewing this, I'm assuming, from sort of our own personal usage perspective. And maybe if we get really big picture, we're thinking about its role in the United States, but this is a global technology and has global implications. So a short question, but loaded. If you were to predict, is this going to bring us closer to a utopia, a dystopia, or just a topia? Which one would you put your money on?
I don't know what a just a topia would look like. But, you know, I think that there are going to be, I hope that it becomes utopian. I think that's where everyone, and it definitely has potential to do so. You know, that would kind of lead to, like, how many people in the world do you think are good? And I would say, you know, most people are probably good. There are always a few, you know, malicious actors, but, you know, the people who are good would need to have tools to be able to safeguard the utopia, if you will. And so I think that, you know, if we keep things with the vision of being a utopia, and that's how we're using the AI, and don't get me wrong, I think there are going to be a ton of different AIs. I don't think there's going to be only one artificial general intelligence. I think there's going to be hundreds.
Can we just stop in and define that for our listener? Artificial narrow intelligence versus artificial general?
Yeah, so like narrow intelligence would be, it's really good at detecting sentiment. Or narrow intelligence would be it can drive a car and keep it between lines. So general intelligence would be it could not only drive a car, it could also go pick up the groceries. It could go trade stocks and detect sentiment, and also 100 different other things that humans would be able to do, but much better. You know, make phone calls, send emails, have a podcast like we're currently having now, and it could do it all simultaneously, while making breakfast.
Right, and this is a level that does not currently exist, correct?
No, but it probably could very soon. I think that the tools are pretty close to being there. It's just really kind of a matter of combining a lot of them. A lot of people would probably disagree. A lot of people are saying, AGI is so far away. But if you look at some of the tests that, and this is what we have access to GPT-4, it's able to pass a multitude of tests better than most humans. So, I mean, would you consider that AGI? I personally would.
I am personally unqualified to make that distinction, but I just wanted to make sure everyone knew the terms. And I think planning for what's next is a lot of what we're talking about. So I really appreciate you keeping our eyes focused in that direction. Did I cut you off? I'm sorry.
No, an AGI is basically it's a system, a computer system that's able to do everything a human's able to do, and probably better. And then it continually learns. So like it'll be able to update its own code. But that's where kind of the alignment problem comes into play. So the alignment problem is the AI going to be aligned with humans and their goals? And then that comes down to a whole bunch of different questions, which most people probably don't have the answer to, which is what are our values? So, you know, there's a lot to iron out here, but, you know, if we're able to align it with human values, which would be, you know, probably something really simple like non-malicious, you know, no malintent, and, you know, probably maybe a few other things, we would be able to create a utopia, I believe, where, you know, we would have to have cheap energy. We would have to have cheap energy, cheap GPUs, and then we would also need to have, you know, the AGI be able to assist in cybersecurity efforts. We wouldn't want the AGI to get hacked and, you know, then be a you know, on the side of a certain malicious actor. But, you know, there's all these things to be ironed out, and that'll probably happen, you know, in the next decade, maybe sooner, probably sooner.
Well, Ben, I appreciate your take on this. It sounds like it's complicated, and hopefully utopia is thing.
I hope so too. I think we have a good chance at it.
Yeah. Awesome. So I'm going to pull the conversation. I think we're kind of heady in the clouds there, which is great. I love that. Let's bring it back to remote work for just a few minutes. So my question to you is, what advice do you have for the two types of remote workers that I've encountered who have declared, I can't work from home? And they tend to break it down into two groups. I can't work from home because I'm too distracted and don't get my work done. And at the other end of this continuum that I forgot to set up in this analogy, I'm always at work because work is at home and it never ends. How do you balance that?
Yeah, I would highly recommend joining a co-working space if you have the ability to do so. I'm at a WeWork currently, and there's WeWorks they're scattered all over the world, really. So I would highly recommend co-working spaces. It's a great way to network with people. You know, they give you free coffee, or, you know, if you have the membership, free coffee, which actually kind of pays for itself. I think it's like $10 a day is what it comes out to. And so, you know, if you get two cappuccinos or something at your local coffee shop, it comes out to be the same price. So and then you get a community to be around. And then, you know, really kind of separating your, you know, if you have a room in your house or your apartment, making that your office, you know, always going to a coffee shop is nice. If you don't need to be on the phone or have like a quiet area, you know, going to a coffee shop is always nice. I've done, you know, hotspot for my phone, you know, at like a picnic bench if I don't have to be on the phone. So, you know, that's nice for an afternoon. You know, there are a lot of options, but yeah, I've been there where you want to get out, you want to, you know, you just had breakfast and you just woke up and you're, you know, like a one, you know, a single room studio apartment, changing scenery and, you know, being able to get work done in a coffee shop or a co-working space is always nice.
Excellent. Thank you for those very specific solutions. I think that this is something that a lot of folks struggle with. It kind of leans into another question I was going to ask, which maybe tangential, maybe still on topic. What would you say to folks who resist remote work? Because at some level, their social community is provided by their employer. Do you think that's a reasonable expectation? Do you feel like, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, remote work, it's not for everyone. You know, if you don't like working remotely, and there's an office to go to, you know, that's perfectly acceptable. It's what you prefer. Yeah. And you know, if you feel like you're having trouble, or feeling somewhat, isolated, again, the, co-working spaces, conferences are a great way to get out, network. You know, if there's a topic that, you're maybe a beginner on, going to a cheap conference, to, you know, over the weekend or during the week, I'm sure your boss or your company will be more than happy to send you to learn about, you know, an AI conference for, you know, logistics, if you work in the logistics industry. So, and then also meetups are also a great way to, you know, meet people that are like-minded or, in the industry that you're interested in or that you work in. So there are a ton of different ways to get out there and, you know, get out of, you know, what would feel like you're kind of just, you know, in your home and working from your kitchen counter. And one more thing, use ChatGPT. It'll tell you a bunch of different ways to kind of spice things up.
Excellent. All right. Coming back full circle. Okay. So let me ask you a question that's generation based, and both sides, I think we're assuming the best of intentions and no derogatory generalizations. So other than growing up with technology, do you think that millennials are better suited to this relative isolation of remote work, better more than Gen Xers or even more than Gen Y, or simply that they're the beginning of this group that's grown up with the tech?
This is a good question. I feel like, you know, millennials, I don't speak for everyone, but, I was born in 1990. I think the first interaction I had with a computer was, my dad came home with a briefcase that it looked like a briefcase. It was a computer. And so like that was stored downstairs. And then, he would work from that. And then it eventually made its way to the laundry room, which was like a real like desktop computer. And then it made its way into its own room. And then we had like an office. And so we had so it kind of like progressed, and that was over, maybe 18 months. And then we had, Windows 95 come out. And so, we had, the computer had its own room by, within 18 months. And so that was kind of like my first interactions with a computer. And then, I was on AOL, everyone growing up probably remembers AOL. The younger generations probably don't really remember it so much, but we would get done with school. We would interact on AOL, and that was kind of, the beginnings of social interaction online for me. And so, it feels like, not much has really changed. You have Slack, which is kind of a similar interface. You're saying, hey, is there a meeting that we could have on Zoom in this week? So it's kind of a similar type of interaction. It feels like, but now the only thing for me that's kind of changed is that, I'm at a co-working space. I'm in Barcelona currently. And so, it's kind of like, if you have an internet connection and you want to go somewhere in the world, you can always rent your apartment out and, kind of get out of your comfort zone and, go check out the world. And, again, sometimes the, time zone benefits you, sometimes it doesn't, but as long as you have an internet connection and you have discipline, you'll be able to get your work done, and sometimes earlier than expected.
Well, there's so much rich context there to unpack. I appreciate the analogies that you made. What's occurring to me based on what you said is it's not just that millennials grew up with the technology, like the ability to do word processing and Excel spreadsheets, but that they grew up in a time where that technology was a social interaction platform. And so millennials forward have that as part of their growing up experience. I also like the visual metaphor of technology going from the basement and working its way up to prime time, and I guess now eventually into our pockets. That's fantastic. That's a lot of food for thought. I appreciate that. It looks like we're coming up on time. How about I ask you one more question, and then we close out here. So for the folks that are interested in remote work, sometimes they see it as a viable option and their employer does not. So setting aside that the job requires that you be nose to nose with your customer, what advice or strategies would you give, other than checking an AI, for the folks whose employers just don't see it that way? They think it's important that everyone comes in and can see each other and touch noses, and remote work is not for you. You can't do it.
This is a tough one for maybe companies that really have to be in the office. If you're working for a startup where you're an engineer and you're working for, it's a hardware startup where you're maybe building robotics, it would be probably difficult to have a team of 10 roboticists all working at home on the same project. That would get expensive. But on the other hand, if you're, say, a salesperson or you're in operations, and all you do during the day is you're on a computer, and it's nice to have someone at, an arm's length away to say, hey, do you know this? But if you know how to utilize Slack or, you know, any instant messaging type of system. It's pretty much the same thing. It wouldn't be much different to ping me on Slack than to have me, you know, 20 feet away. It might even be more efficient. I've had to go to work where I have to be in the office before. And so, you know, a lot of the time we'd all be in our separate offices and talking on Slack. And so, what's going on here? You know, so being remote, it really isn't for everyone, but it can be for people who want to save time from traffic. You know, if you're stuck in traffic, I don't know where you all are located, but like, let's say you're in Austin, Texas or LA, you know, an hour, maybe 2 hours to work, maybe an hour, 2 hours back, you know, that really adds up. That's, you know, 10 hours a week.
It's a part-time job.
Yeah, exactly. And so like that can really add up. And so if you're working from home during the pandemic, if you were working from home during the pandemic and now your boss is saying, let's get back to the office, you know, the job market is, you can definitely get a new job if you really want to. And that, you know, that sounds kind of ridiculous for some people, but you know, having a backup plan, like a side hustle, or that's always a nice option. But then also, you know, the best option is to really kind of have a conversation with your team, with your boss, and say, you know, what their concerns are. If it's that they just want to see you in the office, you know, then the employee, if they want to stay remote, they could always say, well, you know, this is how much it costs for me to be stuck in traffic. I'm 15 hours away from my computer. I'm spending, you know, whatever the gas price is, however far I have to go. And this is actually reducing my productivity. And if you could also show that you're more productive when you're working remotely, then it doesn't make sense for your boss to say to come back into the office, because you can point to the numbers and say, hey, this is, you know, I've made an extra with that 15 hours a week, I've made an extra sale, or I've you know, I've if you're a programmer, I've added this extra feature. And so, you know, there are a lot of different ways to kind of look at this and say, it doesn't make sense for me to come in. You know, if you want me to come in once a week, if you want to do that, then I'll come in, you know, select a certain day. You know, I and then another thing too is if it's cheaper for you to go abroad and, you know, live somewhere where it's the cost of living's half price, your employer doesn't have to have a physical location. So say they spend $10,000 a month in just renting an office space. I mean, that would be $10,000 they could put to marketing. They could put that to hiring a new person. You know, it just kind of go down a list of what you could do with all that, all the money that they're saving, and then also the time that their employees are saving.
Ben, this is fantastic. I think you've shattered a few paradigms for me. And I like that you're using, you know, make a business case to the business. You know, this is why it benefits everybody. I think that's a great perspective. And since we all have reasonable bosses, I'm sure that will work out. So let me ask you before, I'm going to ask you if you have any closing thoughts, but also in those closing thoughts, could you let our listeners know how to find your book and how they can connect with you?
Yeah. So, closing thoughts, don't be afraid of AI. Use AI for good. It can really help you. And, you know, if we all collectively are trying to make, and this is going to sound maybe a little wishy-washy, the world a better place, then that will be the training set for the AI to assist us in making the world a better place. And then, my books are on Amazon. I'm Benjamin Schleiter. If you Google Benjamin Schleiter, Millennials AI Guide, all my books should pop up. And thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, and is there a good way to get a hold of you if they're interested in having you speak or have a question for you?
Yeah, you could reach out to me on LinkedIn. I actually don't have social media aside from LinkedIn. You know, I maybe should, but you know, I just that's a whole separate. That'd be a whole separate podcast about amount of data that social media collects. So, but LinkedIn's good. Benjamin Schleider, you could find me a Geobit. So Benjamin Schleider, Geobit, and I should pop right up.
Excellent. Thank you, Ben. And I appreciate that you're a discerning technology user. You're not saying it's all technology all the time. You're saying some of them are for you and some of them are not, which is great. Thank you for joining us in support of the Center of the Advancement of Virtual Organizations. I definitely appreciate your insights, your call to make the world a better place. And I know the listeners will benefit from listening to your experience. So thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Brian.
All right. Take care.
You too.